Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Behind the Scenes. Welcome to Night Vale Bonus episode for our Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Genuinely, we couldn't do it without you. I'm Joseph Fink. I'm here with Jeffrey Craner. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
We are recording this directly after the last Behind the Scenes, so you might notice I still sound... I had COVID a couple weeks ago, and my voice has not recovered, so I just will sound like this episode, and that's something we'll all deal with. Let us get to your questions. Courtney asks, Courtney says, I'm a new fan. Welcome, Courtney. After a little under 2 months, I've almost caught up, currently listening to episode 215. Is there anything you'd like to say to fans who are newcomers?
Hello. Welcome. Those are two things I would like to say to newcomers. I want to say those things because it's really exciting that we have newcomers still coming to the show. I love the life that Night Vale has had in waves. We meet people at our live shows that are... I met somebody on one of our recent tours who had just recently graduated med school, and she also told me that she started listening to Night Vale back when she was in high school. Like, she was 17 when she started listening to Night Vale. And it blew my mind. But we also meet people who are 17 and are just like, I just discovered your show, and this is great. And I love that. I love that there's always people finding it. That's one of the beauties of podcasting, that these things just kind of exist in perpetuity, and people can find it new all the time because it's free and pretty accessible. So, hi, hello, welcome.
The phrase, I grew up with Night Vale, is a thing that has been said to me more than once, and it's a really wild thought to encounter, because you... it's very sweet, but also, I feel so old.
Jess, sarcastically inclined, says, Koscheck was in the show for almost a decade before we found out his backstory. Was that always part of his lore, or was it something you came up with later along the way?
No, we didn't, when we introduced the cat in, like, 2012, we didn't have a long meeting where we're like, okay, let's figure out what human being this cat used to be before. That's something that Jeffrey just brought, I don't even remember if we had a conversation beforehand. You might have come to me with like, hey, I'm thinking of doing something with Koscheck. I don't remember. But I discovered that backstory when I edited that episode, kind of going through the script. That was how I learned that story. And I think the two parts were written separately and sent to me separately. So I had the exact same cliffhanger as you. I didn't see the second half of the story until Jeffrey wrote it.
That was kind of during a part where I was really interested in having other characters do whole episodes. It just seemed kind of fun. And, that was one, I think the only thing I had told you that I was doing was playing with the backstory of Koscheck being something more than just Koscheck. That was, may have been the extent of how I explained it.
Ollie asks, what is your favorite role you've come up with for the Night Vale universe? Not necessarily a law of the town itself, but world building rules.
Oh, that's a really good question. The overarching rule when we first started writing the show together, after Joseph had written the pilot, we got together and we're like, yeah, let's do this. And we started talking about what we were writing and how to do it. And Joseph said it was just most important. He said we could do anything with the show that we want. It was just really important that we followed strict continuity, you know, meaning characters age. And if we say something happens, then this other thing has to happen. That's such a broad rule, but it's such an important one. And I love it because it separates what we do from something like The Simpsons, right? Like, where Bart is always in fourth grade, you know, Maggie is always a baby. Every episode, the timeline resets. And I love stuff like that. I grew up loving The Simpsons. But being able to have people age in a certain way is, in a real world sort of way, is really beautiful. Like, it makes writing it really rewarding when I get to think about how much Tamika Flynn has aged since we started the show. It's really fun to think about.
Yeah, I think one model for what we're doing here is the comic series Love and Rockets. Specifically, the side... Love and Rockets has two artists who write two stories, and so the side written by Jaime Hernandez is about these two women who, when they were introduced in the 80s, were like teenage punks in suburban Southern California. But they've aged in real time with the comic strip, and it, not comic strip, it's their comics, as in like they come out in issues. And so at this point, they are like well into their middle age. They're working jobs. They like they've had life and disappointments. Their bodies are different. You know, they've grown and aged. And it's really affecting reading Love and Rockets, the way that you can really feel the time start to weigh on them. It feels very real and very interesting to watch these characters age the same way we do. And so I think that's something I really wanted to try was I want the years to start to weigh on these people and them for them to change in that gradual way we all do.
Tor wants to know, how do you balance writing so many projects, like episodes of Night Vale, books, and your own projects such as The Halloween Moon and Within the Wires?
I mean, the joke answer is with varying degrees of success. I mean, the truth is there's often a lot of waiting involved in any project. So you can kind of, it's not all happening at once. You know, you kind of have to finish a book, including all editing, almost a year before it comes out. So you then have a whole year to do other stuff before that book comes out. You know, and you can kind of think ahead for that. For instance, we're looking at having a new touring live show starting at some point, maybe late this year, early next year, and I'm not sure what the plans are, but we're going to need a new script. Right now, there's a number of things coming up that we might be slammed writing by the time it comes around to write that script. So we did a lot of the work of writing that script this month just because we didn't have anything else super pressing going on. And so you're kind of planning ahead about like, hey, well, by the time this comes around, I might be slammed. So let me just during this quiet period, try to get something else done. Or sometimes things just sit, like The Halloween Moon is a good example. That was something that I wrote in 2016 at a writing retreat I did. I did like a one of those classic, like, go live in a cabin and they bring you food and you write all day. And it was really gorgeous. I loved it. And what I decided to do with that time was to write something completely new. I wrote this middle grade book about Halloween. And so I had a draft of it sitting on my computer for years. It didn't end up coming out until, 2021? So it came out 5 years after I wrote the initial draft. So there was just a long time where it was sitting on my computer, mostly done, but not edited. So yeah, you can kind of sometimes things get put on the back burner for a very long time and then come off it again. Jordan asks, what's an example of a continuity error you've made when writing the show? I think I've heard them mentioned in previous behind-the-scenes episodes or Good Morning Night Vale, I forget, but I can't actually think of any off the top of my head.
I know we've probably had a bunch. I know we've had a couple that I remember people pointing out. The number one that comes to my mind is the most glaring one, which was the Old Oak Doors live episode we did at Town Hall, wherein, I think it's in that episode, yeah, because we did, it was a whole, like, giant cast of, like, I forget how many people are in that cast, and Hal Lublin, who plays Steve Carlsberg, was there, too, and we have this, you know, this is kind of the height of Steve Carlsberg and Cecil hating each other, or Cecil hating Steve. But there's a moment where he refers to Steve as his stepbrother, but it has already been clearly laid out that Steve is married to Cecil's sister. So, and Joseph and I read the script, Cecil read the script, Hal Lublin read the script, every other dozen actors read that script, Disparition had read the script. Like, at no point in time did anybody go, that doesn't make any sense. We all missed it. That's primarily on me and Joseph for missing that because we're the writers of the show. But yeah, I think we made reference in a later episode to Steve being like, well, I always forget. I think it's Steve Carlsberg that says it, my stepbrother. So we had him kind of make a joke about how he always confuses the two things. But that was the biggest one that I could think of. Misty798 says, oh, well, hi, my name's Adrian. Been listening for about 2 years now. Can't get enough of all your podcasts on your network. My question is, Night Vale kind of goes between two tones of eldritch or 1984-esque horror and lighthearted jokes. How do you make a place with so many horrors as Night Vale have such a comprehensive and balanced tone?
Yeah, this is another thing we were just talking about on a Patreon hangout, this kind of the balance between horror and comedy in Night Vale. It's one I don't think about a ton when I'm writing it. A lot of times I'm just trying to tell a story in a specific Night Vale voice, and the Night Vale voice just kind of naturally swings between those two things. I think horror and comedy are very closely related, and so sometimes it's pretty easy to swing for one and hit both. I think for me, Night Vale, a lot of the tone is more in the language we used. We kind of established very early on what Night Vale sounds like language-wise, and I feel like a lot of times if I'm able to hit that, then the comedic and horror elements kind of take care of themselves.
Yeah, I think about, in general, like I don't think about it specifically when I'm writing, but I think about levity and gravity. I think about that balance. I like that as a form of pace. I think you can, I like being a little creepy and then, you know, lightening it up with something that's funny. As you said, Joseph, like horror and comedy are yin and yang, right? There's something like deeply connected to the between the two, that they're mirror images almost. So yeah, I try and think about that of like not, I don't want it, things to be too lighthearted without being grounded in some sense of like real reality, some real stakes, things like that. I think that sort of, I think that balance can be really, really important. Obviously, some episodes are real just goofy and light, and that's fine. But as a whole, I think finding a balance is important to keep in the back of your head.
Christine asks, have either of you ever felt that your writing was at the margins of your life? And how did you get it toward the center, if that makes sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to center writing, especially, you know, in the, you know, even now where it's my full-time job, it's still hard to center it. You know, life is the life. There's a lot of things happening in life, and you can become distracted and with those other things, or not distracted, but just consumed with things that are really important. And remembering to hold a place for writing, for your art, is pretty important. It's obviously easier to do when it is your full-time job because nothing motivates you to do a thing like a deadline. But even now, you know, I still struggle with the same thing I struggled with many, many years before I was even in the Neo Futures, which is just find time to enjoy writing, to making things, and find the communities where you can share that writing, whether that's the internet, whether that's a poetry event, whether that's whatever it is, joining a theater company, finding those places to do what you do is really, really important. And to this day, you know, I have Night Vale and I have Within the Wires and Unlicensed and these shows where I can put out my writing and I have to put out my writing. But, you know, still finding time to like write other things is a thing that I have to sort of hit reset. You know, Joseph, you mentioned going to a writer's retreat. There are times where I'll just like generate my own writing retreat, that if I can get like 3 or 4 days where I don't have anything pressing and no meetings, I will try and say like, just give yourself 2 hours each day to write on something. Just to focus on something else that is that writing.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Jeffrey, there's kind of two eras. There was the era before writing was my job. And then it was just a lot of that was driven by ambition, I guess. I really wanted to be a professional writer. That was had been my goal for a very long time. And so I would do things like get up very, very early so I could write some before work. Or I would at work when bosses weren't looking right just during the workday. It was just like a lot of it was just, I have to do this because otherwise I'm stuck doing this other job I don't want to do forever. Although, I mean, a lot of it, like Night Vale didn't happen until I got laid off from that job. So I do think there was also like a little bit of the fire of like, oh shit, now I don't have a job at all. I guess let me just take a big swing here. Since I've been doing it professionally, which is about a decade now, that's been a little different because a lot of that is balancing the work of this job with the creative side, which can be really, really hard. You know, dealing with business meetings or dealing with marketing and then trying to get back in the headspace of like, here's a fun idea, let me play with it. Because like, you know, a lot of the stuff that has turned into major projects started with one of us just playing with an idea. So you have to give yourself the time and space to do that, to just be like, this seems like a fun idea, I'm going to kick it around. But it's such a like delicate process. It's really hard to like schedule it into a day to be like, mm-hmm. I'm going to spend the next 10 minutes playing with this idea and seeing if it leads me anywhere. That can be really hard. And I don't have a great answer for that. It's been really hard since I've had a kid because yeah. everything has to be so scheduled. And it's, you know, it's really hard when you know that if I'm not with our daughter, then my wife has to be, or we have to have childcare. And so it really makes you feel like, oh, I have to use every second I'm not with her. But then that's a really hard mindset to go into, like playing with ideas, is to be like, I have to come up with a good idea right now. It's really hard to do that.
It's so tough. Yeah, I think for me, I think scheduling office hours for yourself, like writing time that you schedule it like you would a date. You know what I mean? Like this, you know, dinner Friday night at 7 o'clock. And then so, but you could do writing time Saturday at 11 a.m. and you can set it for however long you want. And you just say, listen, if you're going to go out on a date or you're going to a movie or whatever, you know the time frame you're going to be there. You give it your full attention. You come home. It may be good. It may be bad. Same thing with the writing, and you just allow it to be, but you just make sure that you're giving yourself, making yourself do the time, and you don't. You know, you don't allow yourself the same way at work. You're not like, well, I'm going to kick my feet up and watch basketball. You just say, I'm going to do this for the time being. Let's do one more. I think we got time for one more. Julia says, all of Night Vale is a bit jarring / unsettling, but discuss casually and accept it as normal. What is the method? This relates to the earlier question about, like, you know, comedy horror, but what is the method for walking that fine line? Can you put a method to this? And how do you decide which ideas are kept and which ones are scrapped?
I mean, we kind of have an approach that's sort of the guiding light of Night Vale, which is that when we write about the weird as though it were normal, and we write about the normal as though it were weird. If I'm writing about a ghost hiding in a closet, I might try to write about that in a very matter-of-fact way that makes it feel mm-hmm. like part of day-to-day life. Oh, that's just Larry. He's the ghost in our closet. But if I'm writing about someone brushing their teeth, I might try to use the language to really alienate people from that idea, to really make it feel uncomfortable and gross, the process of it. Like you can play with, can I make brushing your teeth feel like body horror? And so like that's a lot of, I think, what we do with Night Vale, is just those two things: trying to write about the weird as though they were commonplace, and trying to write about everyday things as though they were horrifying alien processes. As for which ideas are kept and which ones are scrapped, man, I don't know. That a lot of that is just gut level. Is something working? And so much of that is just trying to make something I like. Like, does this feel like a thing I like? And if it does, then I'm hoping someone else does. And, you know, you definitely can get in the weeds on a project where you lose track of that. I've had that, especially with novels. I've had that happen where I'm like, I genuinely have lost all track of whether this is good or bad. Like, I'm just so deep in it, I can't see it. But with, like, a Night Vale episode, it's usually short enough. I can kind of just be like, this feels right.
Yeah, I love that, the thinking about the weird is normal and the normal's weird. Yeah, for me, it's just looking for phrases that are cliche, and sometimes I just accidentally put them in there. I don't even think. I'm just writing and have a character say something like, at the end of the day, blah, 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 and I think, well, normally in writing, you kind of want to get rid of those phrases in your editing process, but sometimes it sort of helps me think of, well, what can I do with at the end of the day? What can I do with this old phrase? Yeah, so taking common phrases, ideas, tropes, archetypes, and turning them on their head is kind of the approach. That's kind of a method that I use a lot. And then, yeah, to ideas, to your response, to add to what you're saying about it's a gut response of what to keep and what to scrap, I compare writing a lot to cooking. It's just, you got to taste your food. And you got to sort of, you know, you can be in the kitchen so long, you just aren't sure if it tastes right anymore. So that's where you ask another chef, here, taste this. Is this corn chowder right? And they're like, sir, that is a duck pate. So you just don't know anymore. But yeah, taste your food, know if it's over under salted, things like that. And if you are eating a lot of other food, you know what that food is supposed to taste like. And if you're reading enough books, watching, listening to enough other stories, I think you'll get a great sense as to what sounds good, what reads good, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much to all of you out there who are supporting the show. We really, really appreciate it, and genuinely wouldn't have jobs if you weren't there. You're all job creators. You gave us this job.
Thank
good
you.
Good job. You can write the billionaires and be like, I too am a job creator. I support a podcast Patreon. So thank you so much. We will do more of these behind the scenes episodes in the future. So if your question wasn't answered, we will try to get to it at some future date.
Thank y'all so much.